You're listening to Album Swap, a podcast about sharing music with your friends. So welcome to episode 2 of Album Swap, or as I'm going to go ahead and throw it into the Latin phrase, episode numero dos.
Numero dos.
Numero dos. I'm Brian McDonald, here with Fred Deese Jr. We're back this week for another edition of Album Swap. So Fred, what did you pick for this week's?
Yeah, so the album that I chose to swap this week was kind of inspired from last week's podcast. We quickly broke down who our picks were for Album of the Year, and I was really excited that Sergil Simpson's A Sailor's Guide to Earth was just even nominated. An album like that, especially over the recent years, really doesn't get nominated or the type of recognition that it deserves. So to see it just get nominated was kind of a win. It did not win, but I still wanted to swap that one. You know, you had mentioned that you hadn't heard it, and so definitely wanted to get that on your radar. Sergil Simpson, kind of a newer name. This is his third album, but I feel like people are starting to hear about him, and maybe this album is the one that did it, but he had a couple of songs before that people were kind of throwing around. I think it's really his voice. I mean, his voice is so, it has that iconic kind of country sound to it, so I think people have kind of limped into listening to him.
Limped.
limped into it a little bit, but now this album is just really taken to a different level. So again, third album for him. This is a concept album. He was writing it as a story to his son. Just had a newborn son.
I agree with you. Like when you're saying that vocal, it's the word comes to mind is just strong. You know, that
strong country sound.
That strong country sound. It definitely harkens back to Waylon Jennings.
Absolutely.
But the beauty of both of them is just a classic baritone that knows how to belt it out and has a lot of emotion and feeling in both the songwriting as well as the performance.
Almost has a pain, like a pain.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I think that's one of the things about country music people like. I mean, it's, you know, people living in the country, it's a hard living, right? And then that voice kind of has those feels in it. You know, you have
the
hard
anguish. Has the heart anguish, of the heartland.
Exactly.
Yeah. I would agree with you. I mean, I thought it's, much, you know, country with a bit of roots Americana sound to it. The brass and other instrumentation he brings in meld so well with the traditional, what you hear of the steel pedal and the slide.
Yeah, and that was the thing. I mean, it definitely changed from his first couple albums. I mean, not drastic change, but yeah, bringing in the strings and even writing the songs the way that he did on this third album was a bit of a shift. I don't even want to say it was a huge change, but it was definitely a shift in kind of the styles and just the way that he was making the music. So it's just a cool step. You know, masterpiece gets thrown around a lot, but I think just the definition of masterpiece is like one's best work at some time. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So it's not like a. I guess it does have an absolute ness to it, you know, like this is the best thing he's done. I think to at least this point, this is his third album, but it's definitely Sergil Simpson's masterpiece, at least at this point in his career.
Yeah, I would agree. The album I picked for Fred is Cry of Love, their debut album, Brother. So I picked this for Fred just because it kind of had a southern rock sound to it. These guys are from Raleigh. They're local boys. I got to see him a lot back in the day, back in the 90s. And they were one of those bands that, you know, you thought was going to kind of blow up, but didn't, due to various reasons that we'll talk about later. But for the most part, just a really great southern rock album that harkens back a little bit to, you know, Skinnerd and Fog Hat and Bad Company. You know, it just lays down the tracks really strong. The guys in the band are all fantastic musicians. They're all still playing today. You know, most notably Audley Freed, who's played with Warren Haynes, and Peter Frampton, the Black Crowes for several years, Jimmy Page. You know, it's a ridiculous resume. But he's an incredibly talented guitarist, fantastic person, really nice guy. And so this is like, you know, every time I listen to that, it's almost like listening to Hendrix for the first time. You know, it's just got that raw sound and emotion that he's just laying some tracks on a guitar that nobody else can even get near.
Yeah, and you were hanging out with them at that time, right? I mean, did you know, you knew these guys?
So actually, Jason Patterson, the drummer, I was pretty good friends with. And, you know, at that time, it was Kelly Holland, Audley, Jason, and Robbie Kearns. And Robbie Kearns actually went on to play, fun fact, for Skynyrd for a period of time.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and actually he played for the Bottle Rockets for
bassist?
A long time.
Kearns is the bassist? Okay.
Yeah, so Robbie played for the Bottle Rockets for a long time and then played for Skynyrd for a while, and I'm not sure what he's up to now. Actually, we'll have to research that.
Probably playing the bass. Somewhere.
Yeah, well, he's definitely playing the bass. he's crushing it. But yeah, really nice guys, fantastic guys. They played around here a lot, which was great. They went on the road for a couple years and opened up for like Robert Plant and ZZ Top, Aerosmith.
Based in Raleigh. Did they?
Yeah, they were based in Raleigh.
They formed in Raleigh?
Yeah. And they had played for other bands in the area, Sidewinder, PKM, gotcha. Some of those bands that were playing, you know, the hard rock, early 80s, dude, early hair metal, really, but not, you know, the bogus hair metal kind of musically. But, yeah, you know, they definitely, you know, had long hair and all that at a time when, you know, to see a heavy metal show, you had to go to, like, really crappy bars in Raleigh. or you traveled somewhere and sure. Maybe they had a decent club. Or the band had gotten big enough, like an AC/DC or somebody like that. But for the most part, yeah, heavy metal was definitely in, like, a lot of these crappy clubs. Or say, some of the harder rock bands until they made it. So they played actually at the Ritz. They played at the brewery. Around Raleigh back in those days. And the Ritz was not what the Ritz is now. It was a little bit dumpier. I haven't been in. We have to have a whole another episode.
You have to take out a small loan to drink at the Ritz. It's a fact. You have to have at least $100. I think beers are $20 a piece.
Really?
Not really, okay. But it feels
I need to go. Like I said, I haven't been in the Ritz in a long time. Sure. I drove by it actually recently and I was just like, wow, the Ritz. Anyway.
It's still there,
yeah. But yeah, like so those guys would have been playing at the Ritz and you know, it was awesome. It was a good time. There was a lot of good bands. Like Whiskey Town was playing back then. And, you know, so these guys were kind of like that southern
Ryan Adams. Ryan Adams and Whiskey Town.
Ryan Adams and Whiskey Town were playing back then. And Six String Drag. There was actually a really good John Howie, $2 Pistols.
Probably one of the better times for Raleigh music goes. We're not really known for putting out a ton of bands. Asheville probably takes that cake. But
I mean, even Ben Folds was playing at that time.
But oh, wow.
More in Chapel Hill and say not so much to, as you know, hard rock or, you know, some of the more rock clubs. But yeah, nonetheless, and it, you know, Squirrel Nut Zippers, I mean, you had a lot of diversity. It was pretty cool.
Squirrel Nut.
But so Cry Love was that band that, like, you know, like on a Friday night, man, if they were playing, it was just like, yeah, like, you know, this is going to be a good show. And they did. They just went out there and played it and, like, rock and roll the way it should be. So that's kind of why I picked this one for Fred.
They definitely have that, you know, you said rock and roll the way it should be. It's definitely the rock and roll where you just one foot, you're kicking the door down. It's just raw. It's just, it's mean. It's Southern rock. Cry of Love.
All right. So those are our picks. We're going to come back and I think we're going to go what? Through Cry of Love?
Yeah. We'll do that one next.
All right.
You've been listening to Album Swap at albumswap.net. We will be right back.
So, Fred, Cry of Love, brother.
Cry of Love, brother.
Your thoughts.
Yes, so I have plenty of thoughts. So, first off, we'll just kind of dive more into the band and the album. So, Cry of Love. From Raleigh, a bunch of guys that you knew playing in the local scene, and this was their debut album. Cry of Love, I had heard about, like, you knew that, like, we have discussed this.
Yes.
I have one of my best friends and a former bandmate. He was our lead singer from Australia, just to kind of give a little more context to their reach, Cry of Love's reach, but he heard them in Australia and just loved Kelly's voice. Yeah. And he was a vocalist, same kind of big vocals. He loved Bon Scott of AC/DC.
And see, that kind of blows my mind for that time period because
He's my age. He's not like an old. Older guy. He's my age.
It was. You know, that was a time where, you know, the internet was and the web was starting to take off. But you know, even then, you know, bands like Cry of Love would have still been kind of hard to find. You know,
and
today where you have all these libraries and streaming services,
so much easier now. Yeah, and I have no idea how he got a hold of it, but.
See, I think that's the real backstory.
Yeah, so...
We need to get him on one day. Maybe a phone in.
Investigative backstory. Tune in next week, and we'll have the follow-up to how exactly Gabriel Lee from Perth, Australia, listened to Cry of Love.
But I think that's awesome. Yeah. I think that's awesome, especially for that for the time, because it was... You know, you felt like it was more local, regional. And then when they kind of played for... some of the bands we said in the earlier segment, like Aerosmith and stuff, I think they got fans in other areas. But there wasn't the level of connectedness as of now where it may have helped push them up to be a bigger national act.
Yeah. I mean, quality music's going to travel regardless. It's just interesting that it reached that far. So Cry of Love, I guess, and one of the harder things to kind of comprehend as far as their reach to all the way to Australia is because they didn't really make it big, right? Like they...
I think their biggest was opening for a lot of top bands, you know, Aerosmith and ZZ Top, and
that's not really. I mean, even though that might be some people's definition of making it, that their potential would have led you to believe that they were going to do bigger things.
Right? Yeah, I'll tell you that. That reminds me of I saw them play in DC, and it was like a Tuesday night show at the Bayou Famous Club down in Georgetown. And I dragged a bunch of my friends, and the album had just come out, and they were touring on Brother. And we'd been jamming it, and we went down, and there was nobody there. It was a Tuesday night. You know, I get it. They weren't getting, you know, the level of airplay that you thought they were. And the DJ from the radio station that introduced them was like, you know, kind of praising him in that same manner of like, you know, these guys, you know, you're going to love them. Sure. You know, like, you know, great things, all that. And... Shortly after this is when they started going out and hitting a lot bigger tours, opening up for arena shows and all that. They did that for literally like almost 2 years. I mean, they grinded themselves out at that time.
And isn't the story goes, so after those 2 years of touring, right, Kelly comes back, Kelly Holland, lead singer, comes back and just says, I'm done, right? He just quits.
Yeah, quits the band literally within like a week. I can't remember. I remember actually picking Jason up from the airport.
Jason
Patterson, the drummer.
Gotcha.
Because I was staying at a mutual friend of ours house. They had just come off the road, and they were just, you know, worn and tired and glad to be back home.
It's a tough life.
Yeah. And, you know, it was – I was kind of glad because then I knew after a period of, like, relaxing and stuff, they were going to probably play more shows. And then, like, Kelly quits, like, a week later, and, you know, they didn't play for a while.
Did they replace him? They did replace him with someone, and then they came out with another album after that, right?
Yeah, so they put out a second album. They got this guy, Robert Mason, really nice guy. He had sang for Lynch Mob and Warrant.
And Warrant. And
he backed up Ozzy, actually, too. Really nice guy.
Was he a Raleigh guy as well?
No, he wasn't from here. Okay. I can't remember where he was from originally, but he lived here for a couple years. They recorded a second album. It was, you know, it was good, but not as great as this. Still very strong, all the same musicians coming in, same sound. Robert's a fantastic singer, but it just didn't have that chemistry with Kelly that could kind of really get that more guttural belting out.
Sure, absolutely. And only two albums, right? These are the only two that
got Yeah. They crushed it in terms of like that hard rock, you know, lifestyle and like then as far as like crazy or anything, but you know, they were good guys. They would go out and really kind of bring the house down and be great to hang around with after the show.
Oh, I can imagine their live shows were something else back in the day. And so another piece of their history that I was at least under the impression of was so back in the day, the practice of labels signing bands, like multiple bands that had the same kind of sound, right? Like wouldn't they go out and sign a couple bands that had a certain niche sound?
Yeah, I'd say, like, especially after, like, the Black Crowes.
And didn't the record label basically sign Cry of Love and the Black Crowes at the same time, maybe? Wasn't that... Am I right there? Am I wrong there?
I can't remember. I mean, there was definitely them. There was...
And they more or less promoted the Black Crowes more than Cry of Love.
Yeah, well, the Black Crowes had a top 10 hit, you know. Which, you know, we kind of thought, like... Or I kind of always thought, like, you know, Bad Thing or Took Hold in the Winter could... do that if it got the airplay. But it never really did. It did somewhat. They did get some Billboard ranking and such. But, you know, it was still kind of the end of the age of the MTV.
Sure.
And they didn't have great videos. And I remember Jason once telling me about, like, you know, yeah, our video sucks and that isn't helping the song sometimes. And I think, you know, that sometimes, you know, and again, being a great live band doesn't always translate to video like that. And, you know, to me, I was kind of like, I like that about them, you know,
sure,
that it was more raw, kind of a return to, like, the early 70s rock, like Bad Company that I loved, you know. It's got the hard chords, it's got the strong vocals, it's got a thumping bass line, the drummer's keeping the beat, you know, so I think, you know, not having a video to me was awesome as a fan and a friend. But you know, I think for the marketplace, it still was a bit like that because you were just still coming out of the '80s, you know, you're
sure
this is like 95 or 94. But yeah, live, they slayed it. They were definitely a great band.
Oh, I can imagine kicking the door. You just get that feeling of one leg kicking the door down. We're going to light something on fire.
Yeah.
Have a party. all right. So yeah, so we'll go ahead and jump in, to the actual album. So again, Cry of Love, Brother, this was their debut album. Was it 93 when it came out?
It was.
I think 93.
I think so. Let's see here.
Yeah, and another kind of interesting part of this is the producer, right? So John Custer? John Custer?
John Custer. John Custer. Yeah, John Custer owned
Raleigh Guy?
Yeah, I believe so. Okay. Jag Studio down there on Western Boulevard.
And he did a lot of stuff. Like around that time, he did DAG was another band that he was producing.
Yeah.
Corrosion of Conformity. I know he did that. But one thing that I kind of found interesting is on this record, he had a couple like hits or like AOR hits. And so when I see that AOR, what's AOR? Right, album oriented rock.
Album oriented rock. Yeah, you know what's called classic rock today.
And it was so album oriented rock is more or less a part on the, like, I guess, radio play timeline, right? It's more of an
era.
Yeah,
I mean, I remember, yeah, when I was a kid, it was, you know, by the time I was in high school, it was called classic rock. But, you know, in the 70s and stuff, they wouldn't call it classic rock. It was more moving towards, you know, albums were definitely, I think, taking over from singles.
Right.
Even though you had some albums spin off top singles. It became, you know, stations would play like an album late at night or like, you know, more extended play than the traditional 3.5 minutes. So,
yeah, kind of moving away from those singles. I think the best example when you were explaining it to me was Led Zeppelin. You know, I mean, you have all these.
Yeah,
you
exactly.
Basically just play. You know,
yeah,
side
how many?
B.
Yeah, let's worry about what's the number one or two rotation,
right,
for Led Zeppelin. Pick an album.
Right.
You know, especially four, you know, every song's brilliant. You could just put the whole thing on and walk away for an hour and nobody's going to complain.
And it was something that I'd never really heard of, didn't even understand. It was, you know, I didn't know if it was a style of music they were playing, but again, it's more of an era of that, the kind of music that was played then and just the kind of the way that it was broadcasted or played on the radio. And from this album, John Custer, who produced it, had two number one AOR hits, and Peace Pipe, which is towards the backside of the album, was named as Billboard named as one of the top 50 AOR songs of all time. So I mean,
yeah,
this album definitely has in its little niche markets, it has a lot of acclaim, right?
Yeah, yeah, and I think that's, you know, that was the other shame that you didn't see him get bigger, was that it got some industry recognition.
Sure,
but
Billboard,
not everybody got to see him, you know. And that was one of the things, like, I think probably, like, maybe even your friend might have seen them open up for Aerosmith or whatever.
Right.
And been like, wow, that was a great band. You know, I was glad to catch them on this tour opening up for a band that I was, because I've seen that, you know, like certain opening bands. And then you're like, oh, you know, they're actually pretty good.
Yeah.
And I'm a hard critic on opening bands, by the way. I'm one of those people that's like, I'll skip them a lot of times because at the end of the day, I've paid to see the headliner.
Sure.
But if the opener's somebody I really like if Primus is opening up for Tool,
so if the opener,
I'm there.
So if the opener stinks, are you just immediately just
I'd say, well, if the opener is somebody I have no desire or I don't have a strong conviction to see, I might skip it or I might just not get there in time. It also depends on
schedules,
right? Conditions, you know, venue, all that.
think so.
But, you know, if it's somebody that's, you know, interesting or talented. But I think that one thing I'll say about it with new bands I feel bad for them is that usually the sound is awful. So as good as they can be or as good as they are, it sometimes turns out like a bad performance because you want the headliner to sound great.
Right. Not the best first step sometimes.
But I digress. We're talking live music now.
Digression.
Let's get back to the album.
Digression aside. Digression aside. So, yeah, so we'll go ahead and hop right into the album. So, first off, Highway Jones is track one. And we'll just go, I'll just go ahead and start. I think this is a great kind of introduction, I guess, to the band.
Yes.
Because you know, it starts, you just kind of add one after another, right? You have raw, stripped-down guitar, and then you just add instrument by instrument, and it kind of, as far as the band coming in together, it kind of climaxes with Kelly hopping in with his vocals. So.
I agree. It's just like,
but you know what I mean? It's like instrument by instrument. Like we're just gonna. You almost feel like somebody pulled a garage like open, and then this band standing there, one guy with a guitar, and he just starts with that riff.
It's
and
got
then,
that kind of Hendrix sound on.
Oh, absolutely. It definitely
eerie,
does.
And then it slowly picks up, and then I agree.
Then drums come in, our bass, and then drums, and then
cowbell,
and again with Kelly hitting it there. I mean, he sounds so much like Chris Robinson. It's hard for like anytime I hear that, my head registers Chris Robinson. You know?
Yeah,
sounds just
Chris Robinson with a dash of Bon Scott.
So that's the thing. Like my notes are littered with Bon Scott, AC/DC, 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 and this song of Howie Jones. I mean, We've already talked about how the tough road life kind of broke them down, especially Kelly. And I kind of found it interesting that they started the album with Highway Jones. You know what I mean? Like the highway's what broke us, but it's the perfect introduction to this band.
It does.
Cause that's
it,
what
it kind
it
of sets the stage very well.
Absolutely, absolutely, yeah. And let's see. I know there's a part in this like later. I'm just going to jump to the 340 mark.
Yeah.
So they have a part. When it just kind of slows down and they come back in, these next 10 seconds are great. I love that.
It slows down a bit, kicks right back in,
and that's like this whole album almost like reflects that. Like it's a lot of that. We're just powerful rock and roll, and right when you think it's done, just a little bit more.
That's right.
A little bit more. So we'll hop on into the next one. So track two, Pretty As You Please, this song. So the start of this next song, AC,
the hook.
AC freaking DC, to a T, Bon Scott, like the riff at the beginning is so dirty. So let's hop, I'll just go ahead and start that one. I mean, AC/DC. You could tell me this is a lost AC/DC track.
It's got that riff, man. It comes in, and then the vocals just kick ass. The support, the guitar. It's amazing.
And I'm gonna jump. I just want to jump back a couple of seconds and go right into the chorus. I love it. It's very Skinner, very AC/DC. Right here, they jump into it right here.
It was a great line.
Right? Yeah. Such a great line. You've got to hold your bullets. It's so Skinner.
Living pretty as you please.
Right? Living pretty as you please. And then it takes off right here. I love this. I mean, that is so cool.
Yeah. It just, that's like so I cool. said, it's kick ass.
It's so raw.
Rock and roll.
Like the production is so. We're just.
That's one thing. Custer and those guys, they nailed it. They captured their sound really well.
Raw. And the thing is, it's hard. Sometimes it's harder than you think it would be to capture that raw, not plain, but that raw, stripped down, like, rock and roll sound. Like, that is a lot harder than you think. And, and these guys, like, that is their sound to a T. And to be able to capture it, like you said, to be able to capture it like they did is, it's incredible.
It's strong. It's just kicks butt. And, I mean, you're on the second track.
Yeah, on the second track.
Let's take a ouch.
Yeah, and I'll hop down to a couple. We're going to hop down to the fourth track now. So, Too Cold in the Winter.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Okay, so slow, quiet kind of intro. Again, AC/DC, Bon Scott. It has, like, I don't know, just the sickest guitars. We'll go ahead and I'll just hop into it right now.
It slowly creeps in.
Just creeps in.
Like
the cold in the winter.
Yes.
It creeps. When I woke up this morning, I could feel that it was cold.
It's so cool. Sick. That's awesome. And then it gets a little heavy, but you know, that's the awesome part.
Oh, definitely. I mean, they turn the guitars up, and the guitar solo is really nasty. There's a run at one point, I think it's about like the 145 mark. This is about the 45 second mark where we are right now. See, and then just how it kind of drops back into it. I love that.
Yeah.
I'm gonna hop around to the to that kind of guitar run. See if I can find that. So yeah, about 20 seconds off from here.
Yeah.
That's so awesome.
And he tickles it a little bit here.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to find. Oh, so I love it.
I agree with you. It's so awesome. And you know, I think the fluidity, the way Aldi plays guitar. I mean, he's Aldi picking free, a little bit, and then he's like crushing it with this heavy guitar sound.
It's such an clean, honest, clean, raw. I mean, it feels like somebody opened up a garage, and then these guys are just killing it. They just happen to be world class musicians.
It's like they opened up a big old can of kick-ass.
They opened up a big old can of kick-ass. That's exactly what they did.
Yeah.
That's actually exactly what they did. All right, so from this point, so one of the things about this album is, I feel like, I mean, and kind of with Cry of Love, is there's not a lot of different songs. It was basically who they are, right? So a lot of these songs are similar, so just kind of hopping down kind of towards the end.
Mm-hmm.
Number 8, Drive It Home. So this one made me think of Huey Lewis, like 2AT.
The big organ's coming in.
Oh, yeah. And that bass. I don't feel just so sick. But it has such a Huey Lewis feel, you know?
I never would have said Huey Lewis.
Right? But it's the organs. I mean, it's the organs. And the thing is, on this album, most of the songs, like we've talked about, stripped down, raw, rock and roll, this is one where they add some organs, so it has a different sound to it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, and it kind of has that Peter Frampton feel to it, right? Oh, yeah. Huey Lewis, Peter Frampton. But yeah, I dig the organ and how they kind of work that in.
Mm-hmm.
Next song, Peace Pipe. So this was their big hit. This was, or at least as, you know, as far as their Billboard hits.
Yeah.
And the opener is so great.
So strong. So the part I love is that yell.
Just the epitome of Cry of Love. That sound. The opening guitar riff. How the drums kind of just launch it in there too.
That.
Yeah. Oh, Kelly just.
Yeah.
You can just see him power stance, grabbing the microphone one handed,
and then he brings it back in the chorus. And see, that's it. Custard cap. That's a great thing of the.
I love this bass right here. It's like walking in the window. You're right. To Custard's point.
Custard captured that sound so good that, you know, you can hear that just great emotion in Kelly's voice and that mix. It's clean. You can hear everybody just so tight.
You can hear it. You can feel it. Peace Pipe, though. I mean, that's that to me, if you had to give somebody one track from Cry Love, Peace Pipe would be it. And then to the closing track, Saving Grace. So Saving Grace, anytime I hear this song, it's funny because you say Lynyrd Skynyrd and AC/DC throughout the whole album. This is one where I think like Aerosmith.
Yeah.
Especially with the vocals, but...
I don't know what I feel sometimes.
Yeah,
it's just a perfect and a perfect finish to the album, right?
It does.
You feel the pain. It's stripped down, but there's more. It's a send off.
It is.
Saving Grace is the name of the track, but it showcases Kelly perfectly. Showcases the band. They walk it down. You feel comfortable putting her to rest after that. I feel like
it is. It's a solid closer to just such a strong record.
Such a strong record. Yeah, and that record is Brother, Cry of Love. Their debut album. Those are my thoughts. I think we'll jump over to the next one. We'll be right back and we'll talk about Sturgill Simpson, or we'll let you talk about Sturgill Simpson.
Sturgill Simpson.
A sailor's guide.
The sailor's guide.
And we'll be right back.
Stay tuned for more Album Swap.
And we're back with part two of episode two of Album Swap. Fred, Sailor's Guide to Earth. I love this album.
It's a great one. Sturgill Simpson, A Sailor's Guide to Earth. Masterpiece.
It is. It is a masterpiece. I think...
it's his current masterpiece. Because, I mean, he's the type of guy who knows what he's going to come out with next, right?
Yes. I'd have to say, I definitely want to go back and listen to previous albums.
Yep. He's got two before this. This is his third.
Yeah, so I definitely understand when you said to me at the end of the first episode, like, you gotta listen to this. Right. It is. It's complete. It's got kind of the old school country that I love. The deep baritone, the strong emotions, really kind of bringing it to the forefront. Nothing against new country artists. You know, they're doing their thing, but I haven't listened to a lot of new country. And I would definitely say he's a bit country and he's a little bit kind of, a little rock in there.
Sure.
You know, picking the Nirvana cover I think is brilliant. And I think I told you I'd heard that before, but I didn't know who did it.
Right. Yeah, it's definitely, it's a unique take on it for sure. I mean, and that's the track I feel like it gets passed around regardless of if you like country music or not, because everybody likes Nirvana. I don't care what you say. So that track got, I feel like, passed around a lot.
What do I say?
And one thing about Sturgill Simpson, so, kind of putting him, as far as looking at the whole landscape of country music now, you have these artists like a Sturgill Simpson, Jason Isbell, who has played in Drive-By the Truckers, and he's now with his own band. Chris Stapleton, who came out with Traveler, the album Traveler last year. You have these guys who aren't the Kenny Chesneys, right? They're not doing the cheesy kind of country
music
stuff.
Yeah, a bit more overproduced, like we were talking about earlier, like album-oriented radio.
They're going back to the basics. And Sturgill Simpson, actually, I think it was August, it was about half a year ago, he had this big rant just kind of busting on mainstream country music and saying, whatever you guys, if you guys aren't going to accept us and really promote us, because they don't. Like, CMAs, they don't acknowledge Sturgill Simpson, these guys. It's insane, but he's basically saying, even without your support, I'm still selling out shows, I'm still getting number one records, because the quality and the actual music is so much better than your mainstream country music BS.
Yeah, I think the mainstream stuff just doesn't have, it tends to get overproduced. And
it's the same thing every year.
It's very repetitious.
It's the same song sung by two different dudes.
Yes, and that's why, like, I have to admit, like, so why I love this was, I've listened to bits and pieces. I'd say most of the country I've listened to, say, since the early 70s when it started getting a little bit more you know, homogeneous and such.
Sure.
Was say the alt country. So, you know, Whiskey Town and all those bands and Sunvolt and Wilco and whatnot. But I thought that they were a bit different. You know, a few of them could kind of maybe get a twang sound or maybe get, you know, that Bakersfield sound. But this is the first guy I've heard that kind of captures that real country emotion that I think the late 60s. You know, Johnny Cash, you know, Sunday Morning Coming Down, you know, definitely Waylon. You know, that it's got a bit of that outlaw sound without, you know, over, you know, kind of copying it and such. It's definitely tinges of it. But I think, yeah, he's got such a great baritone voice, and he comes in with this emotional songwriting and very heartfelt.
That honest country sound. That honest, tough country voice.
Yeah, and I think, I did go and look at his lyrics. I liked his lyrics a lot, almost a bit protesting, say, some of the current events. I felt that, you know, a bit like Bob Dylan in that aspect of willing to take a stand for what he believed in and kind of, you know, throw it out there in his art.
He does have such a Bob Dylan. That's a great point. He, especially with his songwriting, that protest element. And he's a guy who has, he served. I know he, I'm not sure how many tours of duty, but he's definitely been over to the Middle East and served for the country. So he has his perspective. I know one of the songs he even tries to tell his son is basically like, you don't have to join the army. You don't have to do that, because all they're going to do is tell you what to do and tell you where to go and tell you who to shoot, kind of.
So. Yeah. And I mean, he's from Kentucky. You know, definitely heartland of America. I didn't know actually in reading about him, I didn't see that he did serve, but I think that's awesome. And I think, yeah, in one of the songs you could definitely tell that. Patriotism was very heartfelt, not as, say, commercialized as you've seen it. Absolutely. A lot of times.
Yep.
The other thing was that he was nominated for a Grammy.
For Album of the Year, right?
For Album of the Year.
Yeah, he didn't win that, but he did win the Grammy for, I think, Country Album of the Year this year. So he did win a Grammy, but he didn't win the Super Bowl of Grammys, if you will.
He did not, but I did see something.
But he was nominated, so that's
that huge. His sale or his increase in streaming after that, after getting nominated, was at 346%.
Wow.
For the best country album.
See, and that's so awesome. This is the kind of stuff that needs to get out. I mean, I feel like the worst thing that can happen to this album really is being labeled country, because then people immediately, there's a section of people who turn off immediately once they hear that it's country. You know, they just, oh, where?
Yeah, I agree. I almost think like you need a new category, like the
Americana is what they throw around. Yeah. But it's so, I don't know.
It's more than that. It's stronger than that. Yeah, I mean, Americana. Almost it seems to be like that time period when you did have that alt country.
It's kind of folky, right? Yeah. Like it has that element. It's tough to nail down. We should just be able to call some things good music, and we just can all understand that it's a certain level of accomplishment if we can all agree that this is good music. But perfect world.
And you know, so I think that's he's definitely beyond classification in that aspect. Where
but his voice makes him country, right?
I think he's definitely comes from that country sound, and I think his voice definitely has that country sound. But I think, you know, with like the horns that he brings in
on
there,
this album,
yeah, previous albums, I don't, that to me that shows so much range,
right,
beyond, you know, most country bands. You're definitely not going to see horns. But then, yeah, I think it's going to get country also because you got a lot of steel pedal and slide guitar.
A lot of country elements. But
I think, and the acoustic guitar, too, is excellent in this album. It's simple, it's clean, it's well-produced, so.
Yeah, and this is, again, his third album, but the first one that he produced. He self-produced the whole thing, which that's another thing that's amazing, right? From top to bottom, this was his album.
Yeah, and I think that it comes through. Like, I have to admit, like, so after listening to this, like, the first couple times, I did tell, like, my wife and kids, I was like, you really need to listen to this album. This is brilliant. Like,
yeah,
this is
a
piece of music you should appreciate.
Yes. That's a great way to put it.
And so I found it very shareable in that aspect. And then even, like, some coworkers that were like, you know, oh, I like country, and they go to a lot of local country shows. I was like, you should listen to this. Like, this to me is, like, what country music should be, because it does kind of go beyond just, say, the pop aspect of country as it is today.
Yeah, definitely.
So, all right, well, with that, let's dig into this album.
Get the shovels out.
So, the first track, Welcome to Earth, Pollywog. I love the title.
Right.
It kind of goes, I think the album, by the way, I think the album cover artwork on this is brilliant.
Beautiful, isn't
beautiful.
It?
Beautiful.
It reminds me a lot of, I don't know how much you've listened to Drive By Truckers, but they have some just beautiful like album art. And this reminds me, we'll have to maybe look at that and see who actually did it, but that just, and it might be the same person. I'm not sure. We'll have to look that up, but. Yeah, no, you're right. Album art's beautiful.
Yeah, I thought that was nice. So I think this song, it's nice. It brings in his vocals in a beautiful way.
Yeah, starting right. We're at the beach, right?
I know.
It's that's a perfect start to the concept.
Yeah, you got a little bit of sea sounds. Builds up, you know.
It's like, are we on a boat right now?
It sounds like.
I feel like
we're in the harbor.
We're on a boat. A nice trippy intro.
And then the piano.
Gotta love the piano.
The strings. May not be my last, but you'll always
be. Yeah, I mean, what a strong introduction this. I mean,
I'm
again,
gonna start crying,
the
Brian.
Strings. It is.
I'm going to start crying.
It sounds so good. And then, I mean, this song, like I said, starts off, sounds like, you know, that old school country baritone.
His voice.
But then the horns come in here. Yeah, and his voice right here. Yeah. I mean, how can you not like this? I think it's... It's a brilliant opening track, and then, you know, like, it's got layered vocals in, it seems got a bit of tambourine coming up.
Well, tambourine is all, it's always necessary.
Yeah, so I think that's the other thing, is that, like, how this song transitions is amazing, because it starts off very heartfelt, and then it just becomes so much stronger as it builds.
And this is still the opening track.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That when he brings in the horns and he brings it up, it's so fat. The sound's incredible. Just blew me away.
And breaks
like
out,
I said, the tambourine comes in.
I mean, that's a dance. That's a boogie element.
It is, and that's what I'm saying. And it starts off this heartfelt, beautiful song. Goes in. Incredible first opening track. So I thought, like, this was amazing. I kind of like track three, Keep It Between the Lines, which this is a very kind of personal song. I read that he had, you know, some addiction problems and such. So I kind of like the message in it.
Kind of a warning to his son, right? Like
a warning to his son. I feel like also a warning to the rest of the future generation. Like,
sure.
Like, you know, don't get out of control. Don't be an idiot. You know better.
We all do.
Yeah. Long term bill boxes in the baseball. Don't get pushed and settled at 17.
Yeah, and so it's just funky, right? It's really funky.
The fat horn sound, dude. I love that.
And I'm pretty sure, I know on this album, he pulled in The Dap Kings, Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings.
He's pulling
members of her band,
and it pays
I'm pretty
off.
Sure that's there. Yeah, you can hear it. Right?
The horns on this are so good.
Funk
it
band.
The funk thing is an interesting to kind of personal message type song like this. So I thought he pulled it off again. Like he pulled it off really well. It's really strong. Just fantastic song. You know,
yeah, funky. You can boogie to pretty much both of these songs.
Yeah, and then it goes into a bit of a twang country sound. I mean,
oh yeah, the use of slide guitar is so well done on this album.
Yeah, and so yeah, I thought again this was just kick ass track. I really dug it.
Keep it between the lines.
Yeah, Sea Stories. I thought it was probably the most country sounding song in the album. But what I really loved was In Bloom. The Nirvana cover.
Yeah, so this is one. So I've read somewhere where he was trying to find a song that he could kind of relate to when he was in high school or kind of that time. And he said he was talking to his wife and trying to figure out what he should do or how the song should sound. And she just goes, "Well, what did you listen to then?" And he goes, "Well, Nirvana." And she just says, "Well, you've got a cover In Bloom," and that just was kind of decided there. And so to think then that he goes, "Oh wow," and then he takes the song and does what he does to it,
this to me like is so amazing of a cover.
It's hauntingly beautiful.
Sarah is food. When the changes move, spring is here. We've got a deep pain. Here's a one, that's all our pretty songs. And lots of singing on, and lots of shit is gone. Don't know what means, don't know what means to love is a crime.
Yeah, I mean, it's so strong. I told you, I'd heard this before. I didn't know who did it. I thought it was brilliant.
And the video with it's great too. If you,
I gotta go look it up.
When I first heard it,
I was like, "Who did this? This is brilliant." I mean. And I'll tell you this, in my opinion, like, there's covers all over the place. To me, a great cover is something that, like, is so good that not as you listen to it, like, 5, 6, 7, 8, 12 times, then you got to go back and listen to the original because the comparison and the contrast is so strong and so amazing that you're just like, how did somebody do that take on it? And right. I think he nails it here with In Bloom.
Yeah, the heart of Kurt Cobain's original is still there in the song, right?
Yeah, the emotion, the original's heavy. He brings it up a bit in the middle, which I love. It sounds a lot like Greg Allman's version of Midnight Rider. Again, he brings in the horns, and it's just like, wow, you know, just he keeps the song moving so strong. You don't get disinterested in it one bit. And for really slowing down a heavy song like this, it's amazing. Like, you know, there's just the steel pedal and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah. Doing so well.
Yeah, here's the horns.
Man, I want to sing it. I want to sing
it. It does. I have to admit, I listened to this all week. I did nothing but sing this song. Sometimes in front of like coworkers and stuff because I was just like, oh yeah, it's awesome.
It's that good.
It is. And like I said, he nails it. It's so great. I went back and I listened to the original and just meshed them all together and just loved it. So, the next track I really liked was Brace for Impact.
Which is the next song.
Which is the next song.
Track six. Track six.
Live a Little.
Live a Little. In parentheses.
I like the bass line creeping in here. The little organs that come in.
Yeah.
You see those organs coming in after that intro of vocals? So strong.
Yeah, and with his vocals, yeah, so strong.
And I love the lyrics. This is where he's got that bit of protest, you know, kind of a bit of anguish of, you know, the American people. I thought it really resonated with me strong.
Yeah, I love the chorus. The chorus has a very country sound to it, right? Country music sound.
Mm-hmm.
With the tambourine.
So yeah, I thought the mix on this was great. I love the organs coming in. It's got a little bit of that, you know, a little bit like Greg Allman, you know, on the Hammond B3. It's just so strong. And then All Around You, the next track. What I really liked about this real quick was that it reminded me a little bit of, again, the Allman Brothers Heart of Stone cover of the Rolling Stones song.
Gotcha.
It's got a little bit of that sound to it.
Yeah, it does.
And I love it. It's just, again, it's got a bit of an emotional hook, man. It just really drew me in. How you can sell his vocals.
When it seems like the whole world is against you, don't be afraid. Life is unkind. You can let go of pain if you choose. Stop slips away. Sky's falling.
Yeah, right there. Reminds me a little bit of Heart of Stone.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
but it builds up the brass, everything, man. The steel pedal.
Beautiful.
Fantastic. Beautiful song. You know, he really rides high on this album. And I think he comes around. The next last track is a love song to his wife, which I thought was fantastic. Again, big voice. But what really drew me into this was the final track, Call to Arms, where I think he finished this album out really strong. I mean, the song just kicks ass. You know, he's got this, again, the seagulls and the waves. It kind of brings us back to an epic beginning to the album. And then it jumps into an upbeat tempo really quick.
What a song.
What a great song.
I'm getting hyped. It is a call to arms.
It is.
I'm getting hyped.
Call to arms.
Woo!
You know, and I'm glad you told me about his service in the military because it kind of made sense. Because, you know, in looking at the lyrics, I was like, wow, this is so political. I mean, this kind of reminded me of like 1968 all over again. He's really like saying, like, you know, we're in the Persian Gulf instead of Vietnam. The song builds, the horns come in, the emotion's strong. You know, I really salute him for this song, the call to action.
Oh, salute. Like, salute. That was a good
salute.
Is that on purpose? Nice. Pun intended. Salute.
Not intended. I mean, heartfelt. Because I think he lays it out, you know.
Absolutely. No, it's a strong song, especially knowing his background. Like you said, the lyrics, it's clear what he's calling out, you know.
Yeah. He's like we, you know, we don't need to go in and be idiots, not protect our soldiers, and you know, fight these wars around, you know, and I don't want to get wax political or anything, but you know, around you know, a lot of BS. It reminds me of like the Big Lebowski almost, you know, sure. The beginning, you know. This aggression will not stand. so that's what I like about this song. He captures my kind of feelings.
It's a nice little send-off kind of for the band.
I love a jam session.
Yeah.
To me, that like...
It should be a mandatory thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's almost like a great symphony where like it crescendos up. Like, it can slowly build up and you have those slow pieces, but at the end, like, you walk out of there, like, you know, just going, wow.
And every concert you go to, pretty much each instrument gets at least a little blip of a solo, right?
Yeah.
You get at least something, so... It's
yeah, I agree.
It's nice. It's a fitting end, right?
Yeah, it does give everybody a chance to have their solo. So,
that's actually probably a good send off for the album for us, right?
I agree. I gotta tell you, Fred,
letting them jam us out.
I love this album.
I'm excited to see what your score is.
Oh, yeah.
I'm excited.
All right, so we'll be right back with our scoring.
You're listening to The Album Swap.
And we're back. We're going to do the review session now, or I guess the scoring session. So we're going to give scores, and this a new part of this segment is... we're gonna also, I guess, give a hashtag.
Hashtag,
and that hashtag can be anything, whatever we want. Just kind of how
one hashtag
to represent our feelings, our opinions on the album that we were swapped, that we were given.
The album swap hashtag.
Yeah, so I mean, I guess, kind of thinking like rather than headlines, you don't really read the paper anymore. But what's the internet's headline is a hashtag. So
I think you should just go out and like spray paint this hashtag across town.
I'm gonna
if you
week,
love it
every week. I'm gonna spray paint on my forehead and just walk around with it. Hopefully it'll.
I might
it'll
make
trend.
Stickers and put them on.
That's
stop
how you
signs.
Get it to trend. I think.
Yeah, I'm gonna go punk rock. Dude. Yeah. I'm gonna like put them on stop signs, cop cars,
taking it to the streets.
Taking
all
it
right.
to the streets. All right.
So you go ahead. You score.
I'll
your
start.
Score.
I'll start with my score and my hashtag. So I give Sturgill Simpson's A Sailor's Guide to Earth an 8.6.
Ooh, big time.
Strong. Just like I said, I love it. I love the old school country sound. I love the emotion he brings. I love the lyrics. I thought a bit of protest just kind of really resonated with me. So my resulting hashtag is genuine. Just 100% pure genuine, man. Like, I feel like this is somebody I'd want to just... Like, if I ran into an airport, I'd just, like, high-five them and walk by and just be like, hell yeah, dude. You know, like, I like what you're saying. Keep doing what you're doing.
Perfect. So it's just hashtag genuine.
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 Yeah.
Genuine.
Genuine. Like sorry,
that.
But genuine. Yeah.
Genuine's a musician.
Southern one.
No big deal.
Sorry. Yeah.
No, so hashtag genuine. I like that. 8.6. That's big time. That's a pretty high score. So obviously, a great album deserves a great score. So now, I will give my score. Cry of Love, name of the band, name of the album, Brother. I am going to give. And I bounced around a lot of different scores, a lot of scores.
Did you bounce around the room?
And I bounced around the room, and I settled on a 7.9.
Yeah.
And that's a strong 7.9. Yeah. And the reason why I gave it a 7.9, I love this album. This is an album that I would have no problem recommending. It's a raw, kick-ass rock and roll album, period. If you like AC/DC, if you like Lynyrd Skynyrd, you'll love this album. There's no doubt about it. My thing is, if I'm putting a score on it, then part of that is how good of an album, how high quality of an album do I think it is. It was every single song was kick ass, but there wasn't a lot of difference, right? So there's not a huge amount of room. So that kind of, I couldn't put it up there with, say, ELO from last week, a new world record, because the quality on that album is just so high. So again, 7.9, I feel great about that. My hashtag, and this is another one I've been bouncing around a lot. I wanted to get real cute and throw a lot of words in there, but that's stupid. So I just settled on hashtag brother badass.
Ooh, I like that.
Name of the album, like, and just, it's album, it's raw, and it's cut down. I need six letters, it's badass.
Badass.
Boom.
Yeah.
Rock and roll.
I love badass.
Cry love. And another little interesting story, wanted to throw this in right fast. So, Kelly and Audley Freed, right, from Cry of Love, were in we've mentioned the entire review that they sound like AC/DC, Bon Scott, and you were telling me off the air.
Yes, earlier.
Industry term, off the air.
Off the air.
You were telling me that they had a little side project, AC/DC side project. That's a little unique.
They played a couple times, what is now, I guess, The Point. Used to be Five Points Pub.
Oh, I've played there. No big deal. Yeah,
and they did a little AC/DC cover band and dressed up, as women.
As women.
I mean, it was kind of punk rock.
That's great. That's very punk rock, right?
Yeah, it was definitely punk rock for Raleigh at that time, and just, it rocked. So, yeah, that was like one of those things. I wish I had an iPhone back in the day when they didn't exist.
Sure.
With the camera and all that crap. Because it was just like, wow, you know, this is killing it.
Hell's Bells, right? Hell's Bells, that's great.
Yeah, yeah, and they nailed it. I mean, Kelly sounded exactly like Bon Scott. And Ollie could just play Angus, like, in his sleep. It was sick.
That's awesome. That's such a cool, interesting little story. We just wanted to make sure we threw that in there.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, God bless Kelly. You know, we were talking about it earlier.
Yeah, Kelly actually, so the 3-year anniversary of Kelly's death was yesterday, right?
It was yesterday, yeah. And I didn't really realize it when I gave Fred this to listen to. It actually popped up my Facebook feed. And Kelly was a good guy. He left us a few years ago. So, you know, this one's for him. Thumbs up.
Yeah.
Kelly, you rock.
Two thumbs up.
And we'll be back with a follow-up to our Grammy picks from last week.
A quick one. Stay tuned for more Album Swap.
And we're back for our final segment. So last week, Fred, we looked at Grammy picks. So your pick for Album of the Year was...
Yeah, my pick for Album of the Year was Beyoncé's Lemonade, even though I wanted Sergio Simpson to win. Yes. Neither one of them won, so I was 0-2, I guess.
And I took the safe bet with Adele just because I have to admit, I was kind of glad to see her sweep just because I think as an artist, I'm not like cranking Adele up all day long, but I think just great sound, the music, I think's phenomenal. You
can't argue with her talent and what she's doing. Yeah. She's amazing, yeah.
So tonight is the Oscars. We actually looked at the music categories and felt like,
we didn't know any of the songs. That's what we felt. We didn't know any of the songs.
There's no 3-7 Mafia or, you know, 3-6 Mafia. 3-6 Mafia. Or, yeah, Metallica or, you know, any of those hip bands that the, you know.
That the kids listen to? Sure,
exactly,
sure.
Exactly. So we're going to look at Movie of the Year.
Yep. So. Picture of the Year. So we've got, what, nine choices. I will have to admit I've only seen one of them, which is Hell or High Water, and it's kind of like last week. Like, I would love to see, would have loved to see Sergio Simpson win, even though I knew he wasn't. Being nominated was kind of an honor enough. Same thing kind of here with Hell or High Water. I love that movie. If you haven't seen that yet, Hell or High Water, it is. It's a neo-Western. It is so incredible. It's so good. It is
Jeff Bridges.
So good.
Jeff Bridges. One of my favorite actors of all time.
And
I've seen the clip, and I have to admit, it looks It's incredible. Very, very strong. It's probably going to be next on my Redbox.
It is. That's great. It's a very good movie. I would love to see that win. I'm looking at Denzel on Fences. I just as a full thing, I think that I'm going to put my money on Manchester by the Sea because I'm betting on Casey Affleck.
Okay.
I'm doing it.
I'd say that's Robert Ford. That's putting a lot on black there.
I know. That's a lot on black. I'm going with it.
I'm coming in. I haven't seen any of these movies. I do know the storyline of most of them. I think it's, again, a richly talented field. Since I think they've moved beyond, say, just nominating five pictures, it's tougher and tougher.
That's
because all
yeah.
you got to get is like 21%. You know, so the data nerd marketing geek in me says, like, okay, so who's got the most favorable? So if I'm laying money on, I would probably go with La La Land only because the Academy voters at the older range are going to vote for that because it's this, you know, love fest to Hollywood. And actually, I want to see it. I really want to see it as much as I want to see a lot of these other ones. Hacksaw Ridge, Hell or High Water, Fences.
And you have actors dancing and singing like they don't normally do that, so they're kind of, they're stripped down, and it's an honest performance. That's kind of typically what they vote for, right?
I'm like, you know, we were talking earlier about musicals and stuff like that. I think a well-done musical is incredible on film, and it almost adds another dimension because it's kind of like a soundtrack. You know, a soundtrack can make or break a movie or the score. You know, I think it would be interesting to see, or I think it'd be kind of cool if they do win, just because when was the last time a musical won? You know,
I could not tell you the answer.
Who knows?
No.
It seems like 10 generations ago.
Well,
Hacksaw Ridge
gets it right this week. You know?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the sci-fi geek in me wants to see Arrival. The World War II history buff in me wants to see Hacksaw Ridge. I mean, it's so much great talent out there. So next week we'll see who wins.
Yeah, I'm 0-2, I guess.
That's right. We'll start maybe keeping track of this at some point.
Yeah, only if I start to win, though.
That's right. All right. So, that's it for episode 2.
Episode 2.
Thank you guys for listening to Album Swap.
Yeah, thank you. Keep listening.
And
tell
next
your friends.
Week,
tell your friends.
We'll be back with 2 more albums to swap.
You have been listening to Album Swap. Visit albumswap.net for all the latest episodes.